From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, proof of angels. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Iraq is searching for highly dangerous radioactive material stolen last year, apparently, according to an environmental ministry document. And seven security, environmental, and provincial officials fear it could be used as a weapon if acquired by the Islamic State. Just what we need to hear. The material, stored in a protective case the size of a laptop computer, went missing in November from a storage facility near the southern city of Basra, belonging to a U.S. oil field services company called Weatherford. They think it could be used as a dirty bomb. The White House says that a court ruling asking Apple to help the FBI access data on a phone belonging to that San Bernardino gunman does not mean asking for a back door to that device. The spokesperson said the FBI was asking for access to a single device. Republican frontrunner Donald Trump slammed Apple for contesting the court order, saying, "We should open it up." Apple chief Tim Cook says circumventing security software on the iPhone risks the security of all its customers. Now, during that San Bernardino shooting back in December, 14 people were killed, 22 were seriously injured. Lauren Weinstein, of course, is the expert we turn to with these kinds of stories. Lauren, first of all, can you explain to us why the FBI can't get into the phone and why they need Apple's help?
Yeah, well, basically, to try to protect users, companies like Apple and other smartphone manufacturers have been attempting to harden the cryptography, the encryption systems in these phones, because failures of those systems or ways to circumvent them put us all at incredible risk from hackers and even from terrorists who can get hold of that information. And with so much of our lives now on those phones, personal data, health data, financial data, photos, all of that, anything that weakens those phone security are risks to law-abiding citizens. So I'm afraid Donald Trump is just wrong on this one. I heard what he said. He said it's common sense to let the FBI into that one phone. Well, no, it doesn't make any sense. And do you remember I'm sure you remember that the original Day the Earth Stood Still movie?
Oh, yeah, with Michael Rennie.
Michael Rennie, right, as Klaatu. And you recall at the end of that film, he gives his speech as he's about to leave Earth. And he says in there, "There must be security for all or no one is secure." And that's very much what we're looking at here. Nobody is suggesting that the FBI doesn't have honest motives for wanting to get access to the data that they think might be useful. I don't think they know that there's useful data on that phone.
They're looking for contacts and things.
Yeah, well, and in fact, speaking of contacts, if those contacts were actually used for calls or for text messages, they've long since gotten that information from the mobile carriers.
Okay, but what's the big issue, Lauren? I mean, why can't Apple say, okay, we're going to let you in here into this phone and let you get the information you need, and then afterwards, that's it, we're shutting it off?
Yeah, the reason that they can't do that, and the reason that so many people that work in this area, including myself, are very, very concerned about this, is that once you have shown a mechanism exists that can subvert that carefully built security on one phone, it means it can be done one way or another to all of them. It's like having a master key. You know, the very act of building a lock that can take a master key makes it easier to pick and makes it less secure.
Well, does Apple have to come up with something brand new to get into this phone?
It looks like they would have to come up with some new software to be pushed into that phone. But I think what most people are really concerned about here is that the way I've said this is it's the camel's nose under the tent. Because if the government feels that they can use this argument that puts all of us at risk, it really does. It
right. No, I can see that.
If they can say, well, just to get at this phone, we're willing to put everyone else in a weaker position, honest, law-abiding people, you can be sure that the next time this comes, they're going to come back again, and they're going to say, well, now we want this additional access and this additional access, because after all, you were able to do it before. So the precedent that's being set by this is just terrible. Nobody wants terrorists to get away with anything. But at some point, we have to balance the possible value of the data that might be in that one phone against the security and privacy and personal information of billions of honest users of those phones. And I think that's a pretty easy calculation.
So you're simply saying, do not get them access to get into this phone.
I think, you know, discussion of this is important, open discussion of the pluses and minuses and how the policy on this should be worked out is important. But my view is that the balance should go toward honest, law-abiding citizens, and that means that access like this is not a good thing, and I think Apple is doing the right thing in this instance in pushing back against this.
One last question.
Yeah.
What if they got into this phone and it had plans for detonating a nuke in a city like Las Vegas, and he had them on his phone, and they were there?
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't we want to know that?
Well, we could argue that about, you know, we could argue, for example, that perhaps every phone in the country should be monitored 100% of the time, because if you did that, who knows what kind of horrible plans and evil we would uncover. And you have to look at it from a probability standpoint, right? I have not heard the FBI or any other agency that's involved in the San Bernardino case, which is what we're talking about, imply that there was any grand terrorist plans on that phone.
They don't know that.
They don't know that, but they have no reason to suspect it.
They think that he was alone in his wife.
Been, you know, a lone wolf kind of thing.
Yep.
So, but even then, you have to say, you know, if you want to argue the edge cases, you know, you could say, what if this, what if that, what if the other? But when you're going into a court and you're looking at these actual cases and you're looking at these cryptography systems that have to be kept intact, because once you start to put little cracks in them, they just fall apart completely.
Yeah.
In terms of security, you have to try to draw the balance. So the theoreticals are interesting, but I don't think that they're relevant to deciding how this should be handled right now.
What a story. Okay, thanks, Lauren.
Thank you.
It's got to be very frustrating for everybody involved in that. The Texas sheriff, who was one of the first on the scene following Justice Scalia's death, has now dismissed claims that he was found with a pillow over his face. This kind of complicates things even more. Presidio County Sheriff says that the pillow was, in fact, above the justice's head and that there was nothing fishy about the death. He also says that he's been left upset by the political wrangle sparked by Scalia's demise. So I don't know what's happening there. Donald Trump has surged to new heights in the Republican primary, building a 2-1 national lead over the rest of the field, according to a new poll. His 39% support marks his highest in the survey to date. Let's check in with an expert on the human mind, Howard Bloom. Howard, how could this be happening?
There's an amazing magic going on here. If you go, Donald Trump tonight was on MSNBC for an hour with Joe Scarborough. And if you look carefully on YouTube at the video, you'll see an amazing kind of magic. While Trump makes astonishing claims, I will be the best jobs president this country has ever had, I will make America great again, we will make America great again. If I had run against Barack Obama 3 years ago, Barack Obama would never have had a second term as president. Astonishing, huge claims. But if you look at his body language, he's diminishing himself. He's saying things like, well, to tell you the truth, he's making himself look just a little bit small, and he's making himself look as amiable as can be. Why? When I ran the biggest PR firm in the music industry.
Yep.
I worked with Prince, Michael Jackson, Bob Marley, Bette Midler, Billy Joel, and many, many others. And one of the things that I tried to explain to my clients, because I'm a scientist of mass behavior, I don't come from their field, popular culture, is that If you make your audience the star, if you represent your audience's success, if your success validates them, if they know they have made every inch of your success themselves, they will take pride in you, they will tell their friends about you, they will try to convert other people to you. But if that day comes when they feel that you are no longer theirs, that you no longer represent their aspirations, that you've turned your back on them, they will tear you apart as rapidly as they built you up. Donald Trump seems to have a magical gift of knowing this, and he manages to maintain the identification of the ordinary voter, the voter feeling that the success has, his success has not been made.
Well, and there's one other point, Howard.
Yeah?
One other point.
Yeah?
The public is frustrated with the status quo. They are tired of mainstream politicians, and he's the only one who's not a politician.
He's the only one who will speak the mind of people, even when he gets the facts wrong. He gets the general spirit of the people on whose behalf he is speaking right. And as long as he keeps that public with him, as long as he makes the public the stars, as long as they know that he's gotten as far as he's gotten, not because of party bosses, not because of the billionaire donor class, but because they are supporting him, he will continue to make others stars, and he will continue to rise.
We're going to watch this. Howard, thank you so much. Listen to this one. A South Florida teenager has been arrested and charged with practicing medicine without a license after setting up a fake medical practice and passing himself off as a PhD. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office says the 18-year-old was arrested after he performed an examination on an undercover agent and offered medical advice. The drug lord, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, is turning into a zombie due to a lack of sleep from bed checks conducted every 2 hours at the prison in central Mexico that he is staying in, according to one of his attorneys. Apparently, the guards wake Guzman up every 2 hours, and he feels as if he's being tortured. Well, I don't think I'd like to be woken up every 2 hours either. An Islamic exorcist has made a bizarre claim that beautiful women are more likely to be possessed by evil spirits. The imam, an exorcist from West Africa, said that although men can be inhabited by spirits, jinns, beautiful women are more prone to possession. Interesting. Neanderthals and modern humans were interbreeding much earlier than was previously thought, according to scientists. Traces of human DNA found in a Neanderthal genome suggested that we started mixing with our now extinct relatives 100,000 years ago. Michael Cremo would say even farther back. There's a story in our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. I really want you to take some time and take a look at. It is one of the most heartbreaking and heartwarming stories I've ever seen. It's out of Hutchinson, Kansas. A pregnant mother has a beautiful image now that she'll be able to keep for the rest of her life that may serve as a comfort through her difficult days ahead. Her twins, a little boy, a little girl, one with severe medical issues, they were caught on a sonogram camera in the womb holding hands. Now, the couple were told that their unborn twins, one of them, the boy, probably will not survive. The boy twin has a hole in his heart and an abnormal brain. But he is there, clutching his unborn sister's finger. And you got to look at the picture. I mean, it's truly remarkable. I hope the little guy makes it. Armageddon. According to the book of Revelation, the site of a gathering of armies for a battle during the end times. Interpreted as either a literal or symbolic location. The term is also used in a generic sense to refer to any end of the world scenario. In a moment, Gary Haven joins us. He produced a film called Amerageddon. Oh boy, he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Gary Haven is the founder and former CEO of Curbs International. Retired from Curbs, he currently holds the chairman positions on the boards of Curbs and the Jenny Craig Organization. Gary has a degree in health and nutritional counseling, was awarded an honorary doctorate in humanities from Thomas Edison University in New Jersey, and here Gary is on Coast to Coast. What an amazing career, Gary.
Thank you, George. Nice to be with you tonight.
I could talk to you for hours just about your work with Curbs and the Jenny Craig Organization. I mean, those were remarkable positions on companies that people really need.
I'll tell you, it's been a great career. I actually opened my first women's gym when I was 20 years old, and that was 41 years ago. So I've been doing it a long time.
An entrepreneur, are you? Very good.
Yes. And I did the whole route. I was a millionaire at 25 and bankrupt at 30, and a billionaire at 50. So I've enjoyed the ride.
Let's stay there. That's the important thing. Hey, so
that's kind of the plan. I'm trying to give as much of my money away as I can on good projects like this movie. And I'm a pilot. I fly food and medical supplies to Haiti. And
oh, do you really? Good for you.
Yeah, we're feeding 10,000 children a day in Haiti and have ever since 10 days after the earthquake.
Oh, my God. If there's ever a pet project that you think needs some exposure with some of these humanitarian efforts, you let us know and we'll help work with you, at least on this program.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Gary, we all know what Armageddon is, of course, and I just gave a little description about that. But what is Amerageddon? What does that mean?
Well, we've created a movie by that name that depicts not only an EMP attack on America, which, by the way, is the most imminent threat to our country, according to two congressional hearings on the matter in 2006 and 2008. And as you know, North Korea has been detonating nuclear weapons, and they have been launching, they launched their second satellite.
That's right.
Just 7 or 8 days ago, that crosses over the U.S. three times a day. And there is a very strong possibility that there is a nuclear device on that satellite that can be detonated above the U.S. And if that happens, according to the congressional EMP hearings, 90% of Americans would be dead in 12 months.
You know, we have been pounding away on this program for a couple of years now about an EMP attack or an X flare from the sun. So we are really behind it, and I'm so glad that you're committing yourself to some resources to get this going. We're trying to get John McCain to introduce some legislation to insulate our power grid.
Well, there was an act that didn't get very far in Congress called the SHIELD Act. It was promoted by an Arizona, not John McCain, but an Arizona congressman, and it just never got any traction. And it's amazing, the cost of shielding the grid in America is only $2 billion. Now, that may sound like a lot of money, but that's how much money we gave to Pakistan last year.
Jeez. Well, you know, as you look at things and look at the future of this planet with all this hate that's out there and technology that's been available to these people who hate, this is going to be a difficult time for all of us, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. And it seems to be winding up. It's so many things, and you're right, we could talk for hours on this, but opening our borders to unvetted Middle Eastern populations that we know some percentage of them coming are radicalized, and to just bring them in the country unvetted is, you know, it's inconceivable to a thinking person, and yet it's happening. You know, I'm fortunate to live in Texas, and I'm friends with the governor who said, no, you're not sending him to Texas. You know, so the question is, why are these stupid things being done that put our country, our citizens at risk? And there is a power behind all this. There's a purpose. It's not, they want us to believe that they're incompetent.
Right, or a mistake, and they are not stupid people.
That's right. And, you know, Obama, of course, is just a puppet, but people want to say that, you know, that he's stupid or he's incompetent to make these kinds of decisions. But he's a very intelligent man.
He sure is.
Who has a design. And I believe that the threat of an EMP, not only have we not done anything to protect ourselves from what we know to be the most likely way we're going to be attacked, but I believe that there's a power in this country that is setting this up by design.
Let's check into that, Gary, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll let you chime in as we talk about what could happen with an EMP attack and our own security. Gary Haven, our special guest, he backed the film called Amerageddon. A little like Armageddon, isn't it? So we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Gary Haven with us, and his film, Amerageddon, and let's get right back into that, Gary. So you believe, as many of us do, that whatever's happening, it's by design. They're smart people, they know what they're doing, but they've got this plan, don't they?
Yeah. And I think that's the real story here. When I retired and had time on my hands and financial resources, I was kind of looking around for what I could do that was important.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Christian, I also had a calling to pursue truth, and I have a passion for truth, maybe even a compulsion for it. And I felt led to start to reach out to the American people to wake them up. And I realized that a movie that would entertain them while you delivered a message, if you could inform them and while you're entertaining them, that would be much better received. And I have a close friend, Mike Norris, who is Chuck Norris's son, and he and I collaborated on this project. We co-wrote the script, and I produced it, and I star in it. And this movie was to wake people up, to let them know that the government is not to be trusted, that the government does not have their best interest at heart. And so this movie not only depicts what happens if, as I said, the most imminent threat occurs, but it shows how to prepare for it, and it exposes the power that would want this to happen to our country. And so there were a lot of purposes in this, and I made sure that everything was as fact-based as I possibly could. Things like the National Defense Authorization Act,
it deprives
us of due process.
Yep.
If people don't know this, they need to look that up, but there is a law that's being renewed each year by a Republican Congress, by the way, that gives the president the power to arrest anyone that's even suspected of terrorism, hold them indefinitely without charges, without a defense, and that is absolutely in violation of the Fifth Amendment of our country. And, of course, every amendment is being attacked, the Second Amendment. And we are depicting how weapons will be taken away from people the determination of the president. He can declare an emergency for any reason under the National Defense Authorization Act. So all of these timely issues that we are dealing with right now that are separating us from our freedoms are depicted in this movie so that people can see them in a entertaining way.
That captures them that way, too. It really does. I had former ABC newsman Ted Koppel on with me about a month ago, and his concern is a cyber attack on the power grid. So we're going to get this, Gary, from all different angles, you know, whether it's a nuke detonated in the atmosphere by North Korea or China or God knows who. And then you've got these hackers that are out doing their thing, too. And it doesn't seem like we're doing anything as a nation to protect one of the biggest, most important things, because when the power goes down, you're right, 90% of the Americans, they predict, will be dead within a year. I went into a drugstore back in St. Louis a couple years ago, and the power was out in the store. And the manager kept the door open. It was in the summertime. And he said, no, we're not closed. We're not, you know, we don't have lights or stuff, but it's daytime, so come on in and shop, and, you know, we're doing things by hand. and we're doing it with cash. You know, we can't run your credit cards. And they could not do it. First of all, they couldn't add and subtract. You'd give them a 20 for something that was $12.20. They didn't know how much money to give you back. It was a disaster. And I just looked at that one little episode of the power being out for 2 hours in a drugstore. What's it like around the country when everything goes? You can't pump gasoline. You can't get money out of your ATM. It's history time.
Our society is so complex now that we cannot survive the grid going down. We can't survive the internet going down. You realize that gasoline won't be delivered, groceries won't be delivered, your bank won't be open. And they're trying to move us into a cashless society so that we're completely dependent.
That's right. You can't get your water. I mean, people think water freely pops out of your spigot or your faucet. No, there are power plants pumping that water to you, and those things aren't going to happen. You go 3 days without water, you're toast.
And the average American family has 3 days of food.
Yep, exactly. You're absolutely.
And, you know, prepping, people like to ridicule it, but every good Boy Scout would prep. And to have not just food and water available for disasters, which happen from time to time, is just smart. But having money in your possession in case the banks are unable to open is smart. And having the ability to defend yourself and your family is smart. So I don't mind being ridiculed as someone who prepares to care for his family, and in my case, even for my community. I think it's just smart to do that.
Do you have an underground bunker, by the way? You can afford one, so.
I can. If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll find out from my other sources. When this happened for you, when you said you retired basically from the corporate world, what light went on in your head, Gary, to push you in this direction? Did something happen? Was there an episode?
Not really. I've always been a person who questions authority. It just came natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that I have had the ability to think critically, and that seems to be a lost art these days. And when you look at it, the events that are occurring, and you always ask who benefits, cui bono, right?
Yeah.
And it begins there.
That's right.
I'll give you a little side issue that I want people to know about that I think is so important. Donald Trump finally the other day let the cat out of the bag about who created ISIS. He came out and said Obama and Hillary created ISIS. And along with the CIA, ISIS is a creation of the American government. And they were created for a couple of reasons: to fight a proxy war, to bring down Assad, because the moneyed interest wanted that done. And also to create a boogeyman. You know, they've always got to have a boogeyman to protect us from.
Yep.
And as Benjamin Franklin said, if you give up your liberty for safety, you'll wind up with neither. And that's their strategy, to continually erode our liberty in our country, as well as our financial resources.
I'm curious.
Actively being acquired by the 1% of the 1%ers. And by the way, I am a 1% of the 1%ers, but I'm repulsed by the greed and the viciousness of these people that are acquiring the wealth in this country.
Well, and you're one of the few, because theoretically, you should be in their camp, and you're not. You're on the other end. How did that happen? Most people who have had your ability, financially and otherwise, to be where you are generally part of that group. You're the outcast. What happened?
Well, I tell you, there's a couple of interesting things. First of all, I built a business based on Judeo-Christian values. Tell the truth, do what you say, serve others. And I proved that those values were an amazingly successful way to build relationships with people.
And just so everybody knows, Gary, you built up the chain Curbs, which is a fitness chain, the franchises. You built it up. You sold it. You did very well with that.
And we founded it with $10,000 that my wife had saved.
Isn't that amazing?
And over 20 years, we never took on an investor, never borrowed a nickel, and we built it into a $1 billion company. It became the largest fitness franchise in the world. We have locations in 90 countries, and we were at one time the 10th largest of all franchise companies in the world.
That is amazing. Do you know by any chance my friend Ron Rice, who founded Hawaiian Tropic? He sold that.
You know, I know who he is.
I would have thought your paths would have crossed. But so that's how you made your big revenue, your income. But most guys who are financially successful, and yes, you're conservative, you supported Mitt Romney, and I want to get into that with you in a second here with, you know, you being from Texas, what your thoughts are with Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. But most people in your arena would be part of this Illuminati, would be part of the group that wants to control, and you're not.
Well, the first reason is that I have a value system that's inconsistent with their values. And, you know, my feeding 10,000 children in Haiti a day is what I choose to do with my resources. And secondly, people that acquire significant wealth, they're tempted to start believing their own stuff. And they're so vested in what they've accomplished, and it so defines them that they're reluctant to speak against it. They're reluctant to take a stand. Now, there's a few people that are exception to this rule, and several that I've become quite acquainted with. But you know, when you define your life by the income you've achieved, and you start believing you're something special, you know, you're reluctant to diminish that. And for me, it wasn't important. I didn't make the money to make the money. I made it to serve people. And if you serve, and if you provide goods and services that people need and benefit, millions of women have a better quality of life from what I created.
Yeah.
There should be financial rewards that come with it. And of course, people that make their money in the financial realm, I question the benefit that they provide for other people. And if you gain your money that way, I think you tend to hoard it, you tend to define yourself by it, and you tend to not want to let go of it. And so I didn't come from that background, but I know people that are in that position that at the end of the day, they hold on to every nickel they ever earned.
And they want more.
Yeah. In fact, it's a disease. The more you get, the more you've got to have.
Right. That is so true. So true. Okay, so you supported Mitt Romney, gave him a lot of money as a political donor. You're from Texas. Ted Cruz is from Texas. Donald Trump's out doing his thing. Which of the two are you supporting? Are you public with that yet?
Well, I'm going to give you a really interesting explanation and maybe drop a bomb.
And I'm guessing it's one of the two, but I could be wrong.
Well, I
could have been Rand Paul, for all I know.
Well, actually, I took Rand Paul to Haiti back in October with two other ophthalmologists, and I funded a program where we took 200 desperately poor elderly Haitians that were blind, and these doctors removed cataracts, and they went from being blind to being able to see the next day. It was
wow.
An amazing trip, and I got to spend 4 days with Rand Paul just talking about his campaign, and you know, I'm a big Rand Paul fan, However, I told him at the time that his strategy, and I'm going to quote myself, sucked. You know, he had a voting record that demonstrated that he stands against this establishment in Washington. And by the way, Washington is a criminal cabal. And Rand Paul had a voting record that showed that he was not bought and paid for, but he just wasn't electable with the strategy he had to go into the election process. And no matter what I told him, he never would take any advice. And I'm a person who has built a brand, and building his brand was what I tried to advise him on. I talked to him last week and had a follow-up discussion with this, and you know, he said that he maybe should have considered my advice a little more seriously.
Sure, that's right.
I had dinner with Ted Cruz about 6 months ago, and it was to vet him. And I found that Ted Cruz is the designated opponent.
Really?
Yes. I believe that he's bought and paid for by the moneyed interest. And as you know, a couple of weeks ago, he got caught.
Not Jeb Bush, but Cruz, huh?
Well,
maybe both.
Jeb, we know Jeb Bush is bought and paid for.
Yeah.
But Ted Cruz is the real surprise here. A couple of weeks ago, he got caught. He had not reported the loans from Goldman Sachs that funded his Senate campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, his wife is a executive director of Goldman Sachs. And if you look at Cruz's advisory board, it's like a who's who from the CIA. And remember that the people in power, they want to give us the impression that we get to choose.
Yes.
And in most cases, yeah, we get to choose between one of either of their two candidates. And I hate to say it because I like Ted Cruz, but he works for the bad guys.
And that's always been the scenario. They want us to pick one of the two that they have picked.
Yes.
So they've covered their bases.
Yes, and it's been that way for so long now. And Ted Cruz was, you know, he talks the talk, but he never actually did anything. And they have successfully portrayed him as an anti-establishment candidate, but he's anything but that. He's also beholden to the military security complex. He and I had a debate, and keep in mind I'm debating with the national debating champion.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was over Ukraine, and you know, he believed that Putin was a bad guy that was invading the country, and I called it to his attention that, well, not exactly. First of all, Victoria Nuland with our State Department got caught admitting that she used $6 billion to overthrow the elected government of Ukraine. Ukraine is a moneyed interest situation that is just. And by the way, I have 200 KERS locations in the Ukraine, so I'm quite well acquainted with the country. This was about acquiring. By the way, John Perkins is going to be a guest
tomorrow night on my show.
Everybody needs to read his book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah.
And he explains this, what goes on in all these countries. You know, they go into a country like Ukraine and they make a bunch of loans that will never be repaid, and they end up acquiring the hard assets of the country.
That's right. They literally take you.
The oil companies and the central banks all had their greed set on acquiring the assets in the Ukraine.
They don't want the loan. They want them to default. They don't want the money back when they lend it.
Yeah, the money is just printed out of thin air, and they want it converted into hard assets like railroads and telecommunications. And so when Ted defended the Ukraine policy, he demonstrated that he was bought and paid for by the moneyed interest.
So I got to find out who you're going to support. We're going to come back in a moment, Gary. We'll talk about that. We'll open up the phone lines, and we'll continue talking about Amerageddon. We got to protect, folks, our power grid. I've been saying it for 2 years. We've got to do that.